From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. This hour, we bring you two candidates who are on the upcoming primary ballot, and for different reasons, as these have become rather high-profile races. Our goal was to bring the candidates together, but some of the candidates here declined. In our second half hour, we're going to welcome Damon Meeks, member of the New York State Assembly. He is running for re-election. There's not a ton on your primary ballot, but you know, if you're in that district, that's one of the high-profile races. And his opponent, Willie Lightfoot, has, I'm going to say, turned down an invitation to come on this program. We did not hear back from the campaign. We would have liked to have Willie Lightfoot join us. Still would, but that's not happening today. But first, my guest is Michael Geraci, a candidate for Rochester City Court Judge. He's running against former Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren. Ms. Warren's campaign also did not respond to our request to have her back on Connections, so we will have to proceed without her. This race found the headlines because my guest filed a lawsuit seeking to have Lovely Warren removed from the ballot because the Board of Elections received petitions for Warren to run for a seat on the Monroe County Democratic Committee's 27th Legislative District Committee, in addition to her run for city court seat. Essentially, she was going to be running for two different things. WXXI News reported a couple of months ago that when looking at similar cases in the past, well, it turns out you can't run for a judge and for a separate position, and the result is you tend to get blocked from appearing on the ballot. But State Supreme Court Justice Daniel Doyle ruled that Warren's actions did not rise to a level of a desire to commit fraud on the public. Warren had said in court she was not aware that her name was on petitions to run for the committee as well as the city court judgeship. And others testified to that effect as well. So the judge essentially said she can stay on the ballot. Lovely Warren and Michael Geraci will be on the primary ballot. We welcome Michael Geraci to Connections. Thank you for being here.
Hey, good afternoon, Abbott. Thanks for having me.
GeraciForCityCourt.com is the website for our guest if you want to learn more. And Michael, I do appreciate it. This is, first and foremost, a chance to kind of introduce yourself and tell listeners why you're running in the first place. Why don't you tell people a little bit about where you're from, what you've been doing, and why this is a position you want.
I will do. I do want to start, though, by again thanking you for having me.
Sure.
This is a very important position, city court judge, and I think it's an extremely important part of the process to make sure that the public understands what this position is, what do city court judges do, and can be informed about the qualifications and experience of judges before they decide who they're going to vote for. I also want to just quickly thank the people who have supported me through this process so far, my wife, Elsa, my family, friends, supporters, and my committee members. We've been working hard for many months now. We're in the home stretch. The primary is June 25th. I could not have got this far without everyone's support, and we're still just ramping up. So I want to thank everyone again. To your question about myself, so I am born and raised here in Rochester, New York, with the exception of leaving to go off to school. I've lived here my whole life. I've since started practicing law and come back to live in the North Witten area of the East Side. As I mentioned, I live with my wife, Elsa. We have an almost two-year-old daughter, Isabella, keeps us very busy, and my dog, Louie, who is commonly featured in my office. He comes into work every day with me. I call him Louie the Labor Lab. As I'll tell you, I represent labor unions as part of my work, in addition to the things I do in city court. So we have a full house and a full office. As I said, I'm lifelong planted here in Rochester. When I started working back in 2012, after graduating from law school, I started in a law firm right on the Four Corners and the Crossroads Building, Trevette, Cristo, Salzer, Andalina. Very fortunate for that experience. And then in 2018, set up my own shop right across the street. So both where I reside and where I work, I've never left the city. I think it's very important, you know, to live here and work here if you want to serve the community as I do and as I've tried to do. And so that's kind of what leads me to be here.
How much has your family influenced your decision to go into the law like this?
So it's interesting. My father, who is a judge and became a judge when I was pretty young, you know, that was my first kind of glimpse into the legal system, into really Rochester City Court. I can remember vividly going to court with him, getting to meet folks there, watch lawyers work, and it really see all the different aspects of life there and court there. But, you know, it's funny because up until recently, when people asked me, oh, do you want to be a judge? My answer was typically no. I really enjoy, I still do, being an advocate. As I mentioned, I represent labor unions, individual employees. I represent, really mostly I do criminal defense work, so I represent people from all walks of life, from all over the place, in a number of different crimes, but by and large, those are the misdemeanor kind of lower level offenses that you'd see in city court. So my family, I mean, obviously they've influenced me in the sense of, I think, instilling in me the work ethic, the you know, want and desire to serve our community. But there really wasn't pressure to go into the law even, and certainly no pressure to aspire to this great position if I'm so lucky to be elected to it. It kind of came naturally, and as I indicated, even up until the last couple of years, if someone were to ask me, I probably would have said and had said, I'm not really interested in running right now. And that kind of relates also to what I'll mention and have mentioned, is that experience I think is so critical for this position. It's a very important position. It's a 10-year term. I'll tell you, or I can tell you about kind of the type of cases that city court judges see.
Yeah, please.
So primarily, by and large, they include criminal matters, misdemeanors, lower-level offenses that start or arise in the city of Rochester. It also includes landlord-tenant matters, in addition to some civil small claims cases. And more recently, parole matters started coming before city court judges. So since I started my career in 2012, I've had experience in all those different areas. I really practice in city court on a real nearly daily basis. I was there this morning. I'm there almost every day and, again, have experience in those areas. But even up until the last couple of years, again, if someone had asked me, I would say I wasn't ready for it.
What changed that?
A lot of things. Again, where I'm at in my professional career, now having maintained my own law practice for going on 6 years, being able to successfully do that to manage my clients, to manage running a business, having a daughter, right, getting married, different things in life and milestones that I think kind of take you to the next level, perhaps professionally and in your life, where you can then try to accomplish things like this. I would say that my whole career, again, especially the labor and employment arena, I do a lot of mediation, arbitration. And I always really admired the work of the neutrals that I worked with. And in fact, when I was in law school and even prior, I would commonly try to intern or kind of associate with people who did mediation work. One of the first judges I worked for was Judge John Feldman here. He's a federal magistrate judge, and he did a lot of settlements and mediations. And I really enjoyed watching and working with the judge, because it takes into account the law, right, and applying the facts to it, which is what us lawyers do on a day-to-day basis. But it also takes in the human element of what's going on here, what's kind of driving some of these claims or grievances, whatever it may be, and trying to, of course, address the legal aspect, but see if you can also, through a restorative kind of process, come up with a long-term solution that's going to work for everyone. So I really enjoyed that and thought, perhaps my career would take me to do neutral work as a mediator or arbitrator. And now having, again, practiced in city court and other state courts for over a decade, this is really where my passion lies. I care deeply about city court. The judges that we appear in front of, we're very fortunate here, I think, at having just wonderful, very capable judges, as well as really the best attorneys, I think, in New York State and beyond, quite frankly, right here in Monroe County. So very fortunate, I think, to be able to learn the practice of law here and still practice here every day. And again, I hope to bring some of those experiences to the bench.
On your campaign website, you write, quote, "I am the most experienced and qualified candidate running for this position," end quote. And your opponent is Lovely Warren. Why do you think you are more experienced and qualified than she is?
The only thing I would say about that, and of course, as a judicial candidate, we need to be mindful of kind of ethical guidelines about how we run our races, right? And it should really be about just this experience, qualifications.
Sure.
And as I mentioned a number of times, my experience has been actually litigating cases in city court and other courts my whole career. I've brought over 50 cases to trial. I work right downtown. I'm in that courthouse every single day. And the only thing I would say is I have not seen my opponent in that courthouse in my tenure. So when I'm thinking about, again, the judges I appear in front of, kind of what they did prior to ascending to the bench, I just can't say I have the same observations of my opponent. That doesn't mean she hasn't done wonderful things in her career and isn't a wonderful person. But that's all I'm saying is I haven't observed her practice.
And there was definitely a question about whether she'd be allowed on the ballot. And I know that you had filed that suit, and ultimately Justice Doyle said, you know, she can stay on the ballot. I understand the idea that you're not supposed to run for two positions at the same time, and that should be pretty clear. But was this worth pursuing, given that she was saying, look, I didn't know they were petitioning for me for the committee. I want the judgeship. That's what I'm really working toward, and I'm happy to get off. Why continue with the lawsuit at that point?
Sure. Well, at the time when the lawsuit was filed, provenly, she had filed two different petitions. It was on the ballot for two separate offices, which is not allowed by law. And in fact, was scheduled to be in a primary for both. So at the time we filed, that's what it was. And the law we thought was pretty clear, as the cases you indicated, some of them held that you can't do that and you ought to be removed from the ballot. You're correct. The defense in court was that she wasn't aware. And I, of course, respect Judge Doyle's decision. And we took that decision and kept moving on. It didn't affect how we kind of approached our campaign. We continued to work the whole time. It was never any thought from day one that this would be an unopposed race, quite frankly. In all the years I've been around city court and been around elections, I've never seen an unopposed race. So it was not ever an expectation of, you know, this will make it easier, life easier for me. I always expected someone to run against me. But I think, and particularly as a lawyer and someone who's seeking a judge position, following the law is very important. And so, again, at the time we filed, I don't believe they were in compliance with the law. I respect the court's decision. And we kept on working and moving forward, and here we are now.
If you want to learn more about Michael Geraci, candidate for Rochester City Court Judge, his website is geracyforcitycourt.com. We invited his opponent, Lovely Warren, to join us and did not hear back. So we continue with this conversation in our first half hour, and our next half hour, we will welcome a candidate from a separate race. So, Michael, there's a couple things I want you to describe for the audience a little bit, because they don't get to hear very often possible judges or judges speak at length about their work. And there's an That's understandable why that is. But when you describe the work that you've done in city court and respecting the judges you've seen, I know you see a lot of people there that you admire. So I'm not looking at this as from what I'm hearing from you. I don't hear you saying it's a problem, it's decaying, you need me in there. I hear you saying there's a lot of people I admire, I've learned a lot, and I want to take this to that level at the bench. What I want you to describe is this. If a city court judge is not attuned to fairness and justice in the way that you think they should be, what are the possible consequences? I'm not looking for names. I'm just talking about generally speaking. And then if they are, how do you do the work that might differentiate you?
Sure. Well, it's an important question because, quite frankly, in my experience anyway, if a judge, you say not attuned to justice, I think if they're inexperienced, right, if they don't know how to apply the law correctly, if there's inexperience with respect to how to handle a particular matter, quite frankly, the people who are affected by it are my clients, are the people who are appearing in front of the judge who may suffer severe consequences, including losing your freedom. It's not lost on me the significant power that a judge has to make that decision. Any one decision you make, which can be done in an instant, can affect someone, their life, and the life of their family and their community for years to come, really. So, as you mentioned, being able to observe and learn from individuals with what I would say is wonderful judicial or just regular temperament in analyzing cases, analyzing facts, in interacting with people, right? It takes, I think, a certain level of kind of social responsibility and understanding and experience to take those things into consideration when you're assessing someone who appears in the court in front of you. What I think is important, I'm committed to, is to making sure that any person who appears in city court feels as though they're being treated with dignity and respect, as though they have a voice and we're listening to them. And we want to make sure that they are feeling as though a measure of justice was doled out, even if it doesn't mean they beat the case or whatever it may be, right? So I think that in watching and learning from the judges that I have over my career, I've seen things that I really, I think, like and would incorporate if I were, again, fortunate enough to become a city court judge. There's others that I probably would not adopt, and that's perfectly fine. Everyone has your own style. But I think for me personally, my experience, my interactions, both living and, you know, really experiencing our community for my whole life here, I would bring all that to the bench. And again, my whole point is to make sure that anyone that comes in is treated fairly, understands that they have a fair shake at justice. And when you come in with me, you have a clean slate for all intents and purposes.
I have a question from a listener who wants to know your thoughts about bail reform. So first, I'll let you describe your thoughts on that to the extent that you want to do that. And then we'll talk about how city court may or may not, you know, be affected by some of that reform. Go ahead.
Sure. So bail reform generally was some sweeping kind of legislative changes that took passed over the last number of years that restricted in many ways a judge's ability or what is needed for a judge to impose bail. Okay. And so in city court, quite frankly, that means that a lot of the cases that come before a judge for the first time arraignment, many of those cases are not bail eligible offenses. So whether the judge wants to hold them or not, they may not be able to under the law. That doesn't mean that there's not other measures that are available to the court. And that's one of the great things about city court is there are a number of measures to help ensure a number of things, right? That the person complies with their basic kind of obligations, if you will. Don't get arrested again. Make sure you come back to court, right? You have those basic things you need to do in order to show that you're respecting of this process. We also have to weigh that against the community and public safety, right? I'm here, I've lived here my whole life. I have a young child at home. And for me, it's important that everyone feels safe in their home and in the community. And so, again, in consideration of bail reform, there are certain circumstances, whether it's an offense or conduct which is so dangerous to the community, that the court may be able to impose either cash bail or some other more restrictive means to hold the person. Again, that comes back to one of the most important powers a judge has, which is to potentially restrict someone's freedom or take someone's freedom away. So that decision can't be made lightly, but you need to weigh those factors. And to the extent the law allows bail in certain situations, again, for me personally, ensuring people feel safe in the community and safe in their homes is going to be paramount in that decision of whether or not this person needs to have some type of bail or other restriction placed on them.
Last hour, a member of the New York State Assembly said that judges across the state just have no real discretion anymore, and that's a result of bail reform, and it's too limiting. What do you make of that?
Well, I don't want to get too deep into the weeds on it. I would just say that that's true. The way that bail reform is, right, the way that the law now reads, in many cases, the judge will not have discretion whether or not to set bail, in particular at the first appearance, right? So that may not mean that down the road, if the person doesn't appear, they can't be bench warranted, bail could be placed at that point. But I think you're right, your listener is correct that in many cases, the judge really doesn't have any discretion to set bail.
Are you comfortable with that?
Well, listen, I respect the legislature as a judge. Your job is to apply the law, okay? Not to make up your own law. And you know, again, that's the primary function of a judge is to respect the Constitution, our laws, and to apply those. So if the law says that a case or a particular charge is not bail eligible, of course, that's what's going to happen. If the law allows discretion with the court, to analyze it and determine, again, like I said, whether or not some public safety or some other factor is checked here that warrants some sort of bail or further restriction, then, of course, I will would think that through as well. You got to remember, I'm a defense lawyer, right, for the last 12 years, so I feel very strongly about the presumption of innocence, and would just the same as a judge would because that's what the law tells you to do. So we have to weigh all those things at arraignment, and again, I fully respect the law as our legislature has passed it, and that's a judge's function is to apply the law to the facts and to do no more, no less.
I think that's a fair response, and for listeners who want a little bit more on your position on it, I understand your point saying, you know, you're not running for the state legislature. You're not deciding those things in Albany. You'd be applying what is the framework given to you. So I do understand that. Let me ask you about another aspect that came up in our conversation with Assemblymember Stephen Hawley last hour, which is he wants this state to go back to allowing judges to apply a dangerousness standard. Again, I don't know if if you have a position on that, or if there's anything you want to say about a possible dangerousness standard.
Again, just keeping in mind kind of some of the restrictions for judges and getting too political in their responses.
I understand.
I think I would just again say that I would respect the legislature's determination if they want to amend that law to apply the dangerousness standard. And I would just say again, despite the fact that I'm a defense lawyer, that I feel very strongly about the presumption, I'm a person who lives in this community. I see, you know, in the news every morning more and more examples of violence or even what some might perceive as kind of nuisance things that I would say have kind of spiraled into the realm now of making people feel unsafe. And to the extent that those type of matters would come before me if I were a judge, that would certainly play a role in my decision-making about how to handle that case and that particular person. But again, within the confines of what the law says and bail reform says at that particular point.
Does it seem logical to you that some kind of bail reform was necessary 5 years ago?
Well, again, I don't want to get too deep into the policy side of it. I think that as a defense lawyer, certainly, and just as someone who, quite frankly, in my core, feel strongly that people are inherently good, okay, for the most part. There are some bad apples out there, but I do believe in redemption. I believe that even when people make mistakes, they, you know, that's not the only thing that defines your life, right? So I think it's important to keep those things kind of in mind as we think about these concepts. But again, I really don't have any comment, and I think I can't comment necessarily on whether I agree or disagree with the legislature and what they did. At the end of the day, that's what the law is. That's what the state of it is today, and I would respect and apply that.
Again, I do think that's a respectable answer for a candidate for a city court judgeship, which is Michael Geraci is. He's running for Rochester City Court Judge. So as we begin to wrap our conversation with you, let me go back to this idea of where you would have an opportunity to have discretion, because I think sometimes when we hear about recent changes, it does seem like, well, judges have to do it all XYZ. Anybody could do it. But part of your campaign says there is an important difference between how we treat human beings, how you treat defendants, how you talk to people in court. And can you describe for listeners about the word discretion, where you think judges do have discretion, where you think that that sense of wisdom that you hope you've acquired would show up if you get this job?
Sure. And first of all, just to clarify, I mean, I think you're talking about interacting with people in the courthouse.
Absolutely, yes.
Everyone the same. You know, I've been, like I said, around the courthouse for really my whole life, and I firmly believe that every single person, as soon as you walk through that door, makes that place tick, that everyone is deserving of respect and dignity in that courthouse. So that's certainly part of this consideration as well. But as far as, you know, if I were to be able to come into court and to preside over cases and utilize discretion, right? You asked about giving judges more discretion. Really, I would say judges do have a great deal of discretion in many number of things. And that's one of the beautiful things about city court. Like I mentioned before, some people view these as the lower level offenses and misdemeanors. I view them as, in many cases, someone's first interaction with the criminal justice system and an opportunity to use, whether it's alternative restorative justice programs. The Rochester Teen Court is something I'm very passionate about and I've worked with for over a decade now. And every single year I find that there are more and more programs and services becoming available to the court that can hopefully be utilized by judges to get to the heart of whatever issue this person is facing and come to a long-term goal that will hopefully mean they'll never be back in front of the court system in that capacity again. So one of the things I really do like, as I said, about city court is the judges do have a broad range of options as far as sentencing or even as far as monitoring someone while their case is pending to kind of see how this person's doing, right? Maybe, as I said before, they made a mistake, got into a situation that they didn't intend to, and this can be an opportunity through monitoring, through diversion. And the judge really has a lot of discretion to kind of create that program as far as the monitoring goes. And if you do it right, if you slow the system down, if you really show people this is not a cattle call, we're not just, you're not a number, you're a real person, I care about you and your family, what's going on, try to address the heart of the issue, I've seen that you can really have a positive impact. I've seen people that take it seriously, that turn their lives around, and you don't see them back in the court system. And I think at the bare minimum, you see an appreciation where someone can walk out and say, I feel like I got a fair shake. I feel like the court system was fair. The judge was fair. They gave me a chance, and that's all we can ask for. So I feel very strongly about that. It's a very important position. These are 10-year terms we put into these roles. It's extremely important. And again, I just can't thank you enough for allowing me to have a platform to reach out to folks and hopefully give them some more information about this position.
It's Geraci for citycourt.com. Let me squeeze in two quick listener questions via email, and then we'll let you go here. Ted wants to know, could you ask your guest who has more power, the police officer that enforces the law, the legislator who writes the law, or the judge who hears cases and interprets the law?
Well, it's a tricky question because they all have various levels of power. So it's kind of how you define that. They all have power, certainly. And depending on what point in time you're asking, I'm sure that'll be defined differently, right? So, for instance, if someone's being arrested by a police officer, I'm sure they'd say this person's got the most power out of that group because they took my freedom away. If someone's looking at a legislator who's proposing a new bill that has the effect to change how we live our lives on a day-to-day basis, you can certainly say that person has a lot of power, right? And again, going back to the judge, the decisions that the judge makes on a day-to-day basis, on a minute-by-minute basis, really, and as I mentioned many times, what I see is the most really significant power to take someone's freedom away. I imagine you would think that person has a lot of power. The reality is that all those roles have power and they all have interplay. That's how it's designed to be. All right, we don't step in each other's lanes. The judge is not out on the road writing tickets or arresting people. By the time you come before the judge, that's already happened. So the court's role at that point is, again, to interpret the facts and the law and apply those. And if something was done, some misstep did occur out on the street, that's what our system of justice is designed, hopefully, to prevent. Maybe it can't be done in the moment, but if things work as they should, then that should be vetted out by a competent, experienced jurist.
And lastly, Scott says, Evan, can you remind people that bail reform covers nonviolent crimes and that the people committing violent crimes are still bail eligible? Fair?
It's a good point. In many cases, that's exactly right. So violent crimes, many felonies, you're absolutely right, creates a situation where the court may have the ability to impose cash bail.
All right, we got a break here. Michael Geraci is the candidate for Rochester City Court Judge. His opponent in the race we invited, Lovely Warren, did not respond to our request for her to join us on this program. It's Geraci for citycourt.com for information. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks, Evan. I appreciate it.